Reading is an important skill to work on.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. In today's show, we're going to break down the games from Wednesday, the seven of them. We're going to preview the five games we've got from Thursday from a DFS point of view, and we're going to shine that player spotlight up in Boston onto Terry Rozier. So make sure you stick around and listen to that. Michael Bolton, what should we do?
Let's get to it.
Yep, I really enjoy that. Let's get into it. The monstrous line of the night.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Nikola Jokic is back. 36, 13, and 6 for Jokic. Two triples, 12 of 14 from the field and 10 of 11 from the line. Obviously, the 12 of 14 from the field is not a realistic expectation, but it's a hell of a lot better than the sub 50% he'd been shooting over the previous three games. He was under double digits in scoring for those three consecutive games as well. Obviously, came out more aggressive, but it's not just the extra shots. He took an extra five shots. It's getting to the line way more. The usage went from 16% to 29%, which is a big deal. And him coexisting with Paul Millsap in that starting lineup is going to be key for his value moving forward. He obviously got a bit of a kick up the ass from that last game where he was benched in the fourth quarter, as much as I disagree with it. The turnaround in his performance was fantastic. Some of that you put on Malone, some of that you put onto Jokic, no doubt. And I think I was fairly equal in blaming those guys for what happened in that previous game. The Nuggets still go down, and that loss against the Mavericks could come back to haunt them. I believe they've slipped out of the playoffs at the moment, but Jokic has still been great this year. The 17th ranked player for the season, 9th over the last month, where he had that ridiculous run through February. Hasn't pushed himself up to the 20 points per game that we would have hoped he could do. Not quite at that level, just 17, 10.5, and 6, but averaging over a 3 a game, over a steal a game, and 0.7 blocks. I'm not sure he's ever going to be a 1 or 1.5 blocks per game guy. He can be a 50% shooter. He was that for the last two seasons, but he has dipped under this year, and that's in part because of a slow start to the year, but that has started to turn around as well. We all know that Jokic is going to be that borderline first round guy, easy second round player for many, many seasons. Many seasons to come. And he does have room to still improve on what he's doing there. Get those blocks up an extra 0.2, 0.3, get that field goal percentage back to 54%. Get to the line instead of four times per game, which he's gone from 2.4 in his rookie year, 3.1 last season, to 4.2 this year, and over the last month at 6.1. You get to six or seven trips to the free throw line per game, shooting as high a percentage as he does, then he does really push into that top 13, top 12 sort of zone. The waiver wire line of the night is also the young gun of the night, and it's Dylan Brooksy Brooks of the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies haven't had a huge amount to cheer about this year, so I'm sure their fan base is reveling in the streets knowing that Brooks captured not one, but two lines of the night. 29, 1 and 2 for Dylan, 5 triples with 2 steals, 10 of 18 from the field and 4 of 4 from the free throw line. Started out the season ridiculously well in that first game where he had 19, 5 and 2 with 4 steals and 2 triples. Actually, he might have grabbed an award on that night as well, the young gun of the night. I don't actually remember. So if Josh or Barry can let me know. If Brooksy did grab one of those, I'd be grateful. But he has now scored 50 points in the last two games. The usage has gone sky high, 30 usage in each of those games with Chalmers and Andy Harrison out. And with both of those guys out for a few more games at least, Brooks can potentially keep this elevated usage up. Now, one thing about it is that he shot over 50% in both of those last two games. So that's probably an unrealistic expectation to expect him to keep doing that as he moves forward, considering he's just a 44% shooter on the season with a below average true shooting percentage. But these recent numbers have been solid. He's not going to replicate what he did in the opening game with the defensive stuff. He's not going to And weirdly, in that opening game, he had 2 blocks and he's had 13 for the remainder of the season. He's not going to continue to shoot at this higher level, but the usage has an opportunity with, and especially if Tyreek remains sidelined, to be up for the next few games, but I wouldn't classify him as anywhere near a high priority sort of an ad, maybe a stream sort of guy when they play again on Friday. But Friday is a very high volume day. He plays again on Saturday, so maybe you could use him on Saturday, unlikely on Friday. But that's really about it with Dylan Brooks. He's definitely impressed, but I'm not sure he's ever going to be a full-time starter. He's obviously starting this season, but in 2 to 3 seasons' time, I could very easily see him moving back to a 20-minute bench role and being really an afterthought in fantasy discussions. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Wasn't a great night from Clint Capella. He was 10 points with 8 rebounds, which is not bad. A block is all right, but 2 of 10 from the free throw line from a guy who had improved a little bit from the line there. 4 of 7 from the field. Just wasn't the greatest night. Nothing massive to worry about. Although you do look at it and go, why did he play only 19 minutes? And the reason he did that is because the Bucks were going without a center for most of this game. So the Rockets sort of matched that and said, well, we just won't go with the center. We'll play PJ Tucker at center. We'll play those wings, board minutes for Gerald Green, Luke Marmute, and Tucker. So Capella saw his minutes reduced because of that. I'm not overly concerned. We're just 3 games away from him having a 22-14 game against the Clippers. So it's not like it's a prolonged streak. He's still got some boards. He's still finished well. He's still got a block, so it's far from the end of the world, but not a great free throw night. In general, though, if you own Capella, you are punting free throws, so you shouldn't be too overly concerned with this number. He is at 58% after having 17% shooting his rookie year, so a gradual increase every season from Clint Capella, and that's all you can really ask for in these sort of situations. Let's get into these games now, talk about them in more detail. The action from Wednesday's games, there were 7, a very light Wednesday in comparison to what we normally have. The first game we look at, the Utah Jazz did a number on the Indiana Pacers. Gobert continues to be fantastic, 23-14 with a steal and a block, while the Don had 20 points with 6 assists, and ravishing Rick Rubio took 18 shots, the most on the team, which is pretty extraordinary. Had 18-6-7 with 3 steals, so he has clearly normalized his role now. Jingle and Joe, also great, 11 points with 10 assists. And if for some reason he is on your waiver wire, please make sure that he's owned. Derek Favors returned, played 26 minutes and had 7-7. I like what Favors can do. We're fairly confident of what his role's going to be. But the upside, if Gobert's healthy, is just really limited. And in a 12-team league, if you're looking to stream blokes in, or you're really looking to attack certain categories, you might need to move on from Favors. I think in a 10-team league, there are going to be better options on the wire. And his upside is really limited in 12-team leagues as well. Jay Crowder had 16 points, so a bounce back from his last game, shot the ball well, didn't do all that much, and he is more of a deeper league guy. Onto the Pacers. For as good as Gobert is defensively, opposition centers against the Jazz have been able to put up good fantasy numbers recently, and Miles Turner was another example. 24-4 for Turner with 3 blocks. This was after a piss-poor performance in his last outing. We know he's been inconsistent all season, but this is what he can do when he gets things rolling, so that's obviously a great sign. Oladipo did not shoot well, 13 points on 19 shots, but 7 assists, 5 steals, 1 block. This is why he is an elite fantasy player, because even when the shot doesn't go in, there's contributions coming from multiple areas. Had a big chat about Bojan Bogdanović the other day, saying that his shooting percentage probably won't stick. It dropped in this one, 13 points in 33 minutes, but impressively, he still got to the line 6 times, which had been another reason for his elevated ranking. Hit 5 of 6 there, and that's really helping his value, plus got the 2 steals, so you could still hold him. While Corey Joseph played a lot of minutes, had 12 and 6, but Daz Collison's going to be back, hopefully, in the next 2 or 3 games, and Joseph's not a high producer anyway. Trevor Booker made his debut. That limited Lance Stevenson's minutes. Obviously not owning Stevenson anywhere, and Booker, or deeper leagues, sorry. And Booker's more in that range as well. The Houston Rockets and the Milwaukee Bucks. Jimmy Harden, 26, 5, and 6. 4 steals, a block, 3 triples. Just look, the numbers just continue to be awesome. While Eric Gordon had 18, 6, and 2 with 4 triples, a steal, and a block. Since returning from his illness, he's shooting 49% from 3. So we can expect that number to drop down. Great at the moment, great points, great threes, but he doesn't do much in those other areas. This game aside, really solid contributions all around, but that shooting is going to drop off, and I would consider him a borderline sort of player. Chrissy Paul had 16, 5, and 11, while Marmute had 11 and 7, a steal and a block in his 30 minutes. Ariza struggled, PJ Tucker didn't do too much, and I've already talked about Capella. On to the Bucks. Chrissy Middleton, 18, 12, and 5, 3 steals. He struggled with his knee in the previous game, but bounced back here, so that's a great sign. While Yanni had 30 and 7 with 2 blocks. Good numbers from both of those guys. As I said, the Bucks went without a center for a lot of this game. No Tyler Zeller. The Muppet John Henson played 20 minutes, and Thon McCur was a DNP CD. So literally, there was no center for over half of this game, with Yanni taking a lot of that time. And that meant that the wings needed more minutes. 30 minutes for Jason Terry and scored 2 points. He had 2 steals and 5 triples, and it appears that Joe Prunty likes Terry more than Jason Kidd, which I didn't think was possible. He is a 16 to 18 team league guy just because he's getting playing time, but when Dellavedova Dover and Brogdon eventually return, although Brogdon's still a way away, when they eventually come back, Terry's minutes will be reduced. Tone Snells are also going to be reduced because he can't get the minutes now. He's not that good. While Sterling Brown, I like Sterling Brown, 15 points with 3 triples in 27 minutes, 5 rebounds for Sterlo, really good 3-point shooter, can get steals, can do a few other things as well. I don't think he's really ever going to sniff 12 team league this year or even probably next year, but I think he can have a couple of top 100, top 120 type seasons, and he is in the rotation every night, and I think he should remain in there even when everyone comes back ahead of Tony Snell. I'm probably going to be in the minority there, and I'm not part of the coaching staff, but I could see that's how I would want to run the rotation. I think that Brown can offer more than what Tony Snell does. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Chicago Bulls. The Grizzlies got down big early, and then the bench got them back into the game. So J.B. Bickerstaff said he didn't want to disrupt the rhythm that the bench had, so didn't bring back Marc Gasol for the fourth quarter. Gasol only played 27 minutes. I'm not sure if J.B. realized that's what got David Fizdale fired. Gasol had 17, 6, and 7 in 27 minutes. He's going to rest some back-to-backs. He's going to have some of these limited minutes games, but otherwise, I think his value is pretty solid. No Mario Chalmers, Chandler Parsons, Tyreek Evans, Andy Harrison, Jarrell Martin. Parsons was out attending the funeral of his former agent Dan Fagan, who died tragically a few days ago, so he'll likely return in that next game. Even with Jarrell Martin out, Jermichael Green only played 27 minutes, 11 and 8 with 1 assist and 0 blocks. This is Jermichael Green, not the bloke who's getting 5.5 assists per game or 2 blocks per game, as I've highlighted many times. This is him, and it's totally fine. But those other numbers, they're just not a realistic representation of what he is. And when Jarrell Martin comes back, I expect more of these sort of performances than these other bullshit big games that Jermichael Green was putting up. Kobe Simmons had 11 points with 3 steals and a block. He played 28 minutes. As long as Tyreek is out, he can be a short-term value guy. Well, Benny McLemore, is he resurrected? 17 in 38 minutes for Ben. 3 triples, 7 rebounds, 3 steals. Now, one thing, he has always been a really good rebounder for his position. The minutes are flowing his way with Harrow and Chalmers out. And if Tyreek remains out, the minutes are going to be fine for him. So, if you are desperate for some scoring with some out-of-position rebounding, Benny Mac might be someone that you can use. And that is a weird sentence to say, but it's happening. Xavier Rattan-Mays played 28 minutes, had 7 assists, a steal, and a block. Again, while Tyreek is out, he's going to get minutes. Steals, assists, you need them, you stream them. And XRM, which is just an excellent, excellent set of initials, he could be that guy that does help you. Look at him in 20s and 18s and 16s and shit. If you need those stats in 14-team leagues, you stream it in, you use it, and you see how it goes. On to the Bulls. Well, I don't know what the NBA said to Chicago, but they must have scared the shit out of them, because not only did Justin Holiday return to the lineup, but they had to start him. 17 minutes he played, 14 points, didn't miss a shot, because of course, you're one of the worst shooters on this team, did not miss a single shot, hit 4 triples, but now that he is back and playing, this is a realistic expectation. He's not going to be playing, or the shooting's not shit, I mean the playing time. He's not going to be playing 30 minutes a night. He's not going to be coming out there and hitting every one of his shots or anything like that. So, you know, 10 points, 8 points in 18 minutes, 3 a game maybe, but that's not anything for 12 team leagues. But it obviously puts a dent in David Nwaba's value and Denzel the Hammer Valentine. 21 minutes for the Hammer, 1-1-4. I am 100% sure that he is going to be pissed, because he's never been given an opportunity this year, and it does shit me. While Nwaba had 8-4, and I think both of those guys, if you did grab them in 12-team leagues with this new approach and with the fact that Lopez is going to be reintegrated into the next game, there's a chance that they're not. Well, I think there's a significant chance that Nwaba and Valentine aren't going to have anywhere near 12-team league value. Now, what the Bulls are going to do is that in road games, Holiday and Lopez are going to play, and then one of them can sit every home game. So they're going to play every road game and sit like alternate home games, seems to be the plan, but they're not going to play big minutes when they play. Punchbob Shiploke played 30 minutes, had 15 and 10 without Lopez. So when Lopez is back for the next couple of games, will his minutes drop down? Probably, but he's shown in 27 minutes a night he can be a useful 12-team league guy, so I'd still be holding him. While Chrissy Dunn had 21, 3, and 9 with 3 steals, a strong night from him and Markkanen. Good to see him bounce back 22 and 6 in his 35 minutes. The Toronto Raptors and the Detroit Pistons, just a crazy, crazy ending to this game. DeMar DeRozan gets the game-tying poster dunk. Craziness. And then there was like 0.3 seconds left and there were three turnovers without the clock even restarting. Teams trying to lob it up at the basket for the win and just throwing the ball completely out of bounds. And then it went to overtime and no one scored for about the first 3 minutes of overtime. The Raptors end up getting the win on the back of Lowry and DeRozan, who put up huge nights. 15-7 and 15 for Lowry with four steals, while DeRozan was awesome. 42-4 and 6. Including hitting Freddie VanVleet for the game-winning three on an excellent pass to win the game. Clearly, both good performances. Serge Ibaka was ejected early, so we saw more minutes for Pascal Siakam and Jonas Valanciunas, who was absolutely sensational in overtime. Valanciunas, 31 minutes, 14 and 11, two steals and three blocks, with two of those blocks coming in overtime. When he gets 31 minutes a night, he's a top 50 guy. There is absolutely zero discussion about that. But getting those minutes is clearly the challenge. Poeltl only played 18 minutes here because of how well Valanciunas was playing. Siakam was okay, triple one, 8-6 and 4. They're fine, deep league stuff. With no Jedi.
Hello there.
OG Anunoby, and with DeLon Wright going out again with that toe injury, Norm Powell played extended minutes. He got the start over Malcolm Miller. He played 28 minutes and had 17 and 4 with three triples. But obviously there's two things that had to change. Well, actually three things. Anunoby had to be out. DeLon Wright had to be out, and then Powell had to play well. They're three variables which aren't going to be there every game. So you can look at that and go, oh, Powell, 17 points. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Yeah, probably not. Just that sort of production or those three things all happening, and Noah Barker as well pushing CJ Miles to the four more, it does open up those more minutes for Norm. But I wouldn't be looking at this as something where I'm going to grab him in 12 or even 14-team leagues. On to the Pistons. Blake Griffin looks like he's busted out of that mini slump. 31, 3, and 4 with two steals and a block, while Reggie Bullock, another good game. He has been excellent this year. 21, 3, and 4 with three triples. There was no Stan Johnson. So even though Johnson was coming off the bench, with his absence, Stan Van Gundy decided to change up the starting lineup. He put Luke Kennard, who'd been out of the rotation, into the starting lineup and moved Jim Ennis to the bench. Kennard played 31 and had 9, 6, and 3. Hit two triples. I think he can be a top 100 fantasy guy. Not this year, but I think he can be that. Well, Ennis had 14, 5, and 4 in 36 minutes. A strong game, no doubt. But on 67% shooting, only 6 attempts, he's not a 12-team league candidate. Drummo had 10 and 21 and shot just horribly. 5 of 14 from the field. And it was actually a good Ish Smith game, 14 with 7 assists. But we've talked about him enough, and the good games are fairly few and far between. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Sacramento Kings. Anthony Davis sprained his ankle.
Oh, no!
He did not return to the game. The game was in hand. He thinks he'll be fine. He is apparently going to be having an MRI tomorrow. We know that for some reason he seems to heal himself really, really quickly with these injuries. Still was excellent. 17 and 5, two triples, two steals, five blocks in 23 minutes. That is still ludicrous. He might miss one game with they got against Utah coming up on the weekend, but otherwise it looks like he's going to be fine. Jrue Holiday, 23, 3, and 8, just continued chugging along. And with Davis injured, Nick Mirotic actually closed this game at center and played 31 minutes. He had 26 and 10 with four triples, but it feels like that he's going to be stuck in the 25 to 27 minute zone instead of the 32 minute zone. Emeka Okafor had 5 and 6 in 17 minutes, and if Davis misses time, I think Okafor gets a boost, as does Sheck Diallo, who had 6 and 2. Had a knee issue of his own, but he was able to check back in. Rondo, he revenged gamed really, really well. He has 6, 4 and 7 in 32 minutes. That's still production that you want to hold on to. The 7 assists are nice there, but again, the other side of the revenge game coin. Onto the Kings. De'Aaron Fox exited this game after 5 minutes with back stiffness. So Frank Mason played 29. He had 16 points with 6 assists and a triple one. If Fox is out, and I don't think the Fox injury is serious, but if Fox is out, then Mason would be a guy that I would add in 12-team formats. The resting bullshit continued. There was no Vince Carter in this game, but Zach Randolph returned. And of course, whenever Zach Randolph returns, he has to move into the starting lineup. It must be something in his contract that when you play, you have to start. Scalabissiere moving back and forth out of the lineup. Just consistent bullshit from this team. Randolph, 19-5. Yeah, decent numbers, but he looks like he's going to play every second game, while Labissiere had 14-4-3. And I think that Scal is a must-own guy. Budrick had 20-5 with four triples. Did not shoot the ball well, 39%, but good volume scoring with very little else. And I think that's probably his ceiling in the NBA, to be honest. Kufos got the start with Cauley Stein sidelined. 6-10, very little value there, while Bogdanovich had a real stinker. 0-6 from the field, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal and a block. But again, one of those guys that even if the shot doesn't fall, there's still little bits and pieces happening over there. And you know, he could have very easily had a much better game than this. And I still think that he's a guy that needs to be held on to in 12-team formats. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the Denver Nuggets. LeBron is ridiculous. 39 minutes, 39 points, 5 triples, 8 rebounds, 10 assists, 1 steal, 60% shooting, hitting shot after shot. And to be honest, watching what he is doing at his age, the discussion, it's not even, I don't want to necessarily get into this discussion, but if someone said to me, I think LeBron's the best player of all time, I go, yeah, fair enough. That's it. Yep. All right. Cool. And I don't even know where I stand on it at the moment. That is how good LeBron is. He's playing just at an unbelievable level, continues to do shit that's remarkable. And again, if you said that LeBron's the greatest of all time, I go, yeah, cool. No worries. I'm totally on board with that. If you said that Jordan was the greatest of all time, I'd say, yep, I'm fine with that as well. Larry Nance Jr., 37 minutes. He is the Cavs starting center for the rest of the season. I can pretty much write that down in pen as long as I've got some whiteout next to me, but I'm pretty happy to write it in pen. 13-13-3 with 4 steals. He is a must-own player. While Rocket Rodney Hood got another start, had 15 points with 2 steals. Very little else, though. More of a streamer for points. Jeff Green was back.
My name is Jeff.
10 points in 17 minutes, little to see there. The plumber J.R. Smith only played 25 minutes, while Georgie Hill played 31 and did nothing, and Jordy Clarkson played 20 and did nothing. Really tough to consider holding Hill at this point. On to the Nuggets. Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
Wasn't quite as good as last time against Cleveland, but 18-4 with 4 triples, 2 assists, 1 steal and 1 block. We're happy with that. While Millsap was okay in his 26-12-5. The Blue Arrow really struggling at the moment. Minutes are down, 11-7. I wouldn't be dropping him, but it is a bit of a slump. While Babyneck Wilson Chandler had 3-7-3 and Farton Will Barton had 4-2-3. This is what I talk about with Barton. Inconsistency is a real problem. I can't stand watching him, and then he throws out the highlight reverse spinning layups and you go, shit, that was awesome. But then some of the other stuff is just absolutely infuriating. Of course, you still hold Barton, and Babyneck is not a 12-team league player. The last game of the night, the Orlando Magic and the LA Lakers. I am recording this right after these games finished, and I was watching Cavs Nuggets to the final quarter of that, so I didn't see the end of this Lakers-Magic game. But from all reports, there is some absolute crazy bullshit that went on, and the Magic should feel, they probably would have lost anyway from what I'm seeing, but they should feel really aggrieved by the process. I have to go and watch the whole sequence. I haven't done that yet, but yeah, apparently some weird bullshit going on there. Nick Vucevic, 24-12-6 with 2 blocks. He is just really a good player and a really good fantasy option too. While Azar Gordon had 28-14. Evan Fournier went to the locker room with a knee sprain, 11-2-2 in 19 minutes. If he misses time, I would have to think that they move Johnny Simmons over to shooting guard, and we will get John Isaac starting. Now, Isaac, there was rumors he would start this game. He picked up 5 fouls in 14 minutes. Shout out to Marquise Chris. He still had 2 steals in that time, and his ability to get steals, to get blocks, is what's going to make him a close to elite fantasy guy at some point, I believe. He probably has that top 50, top 40 upside just with that ability to get steals and blocks. Like if he averaged 2 steals and 2 blocks per game with 10 rebounds and 15 points, I would not be shocked at all. I really think he's a significant talent. Johnny Simmons had 9-5-7. That's okay. He is just okay. I don't think that he is a 10-teamer or 12-team must-own guy, but if you had him in a 12-team league, I wouldn't say that it was necessarily poor. 9 points for DJ Augustine with 8 assists. Another okay night. The minutes were fine. He has value in 12-team leagues. Onto the Lakers, the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, back to that early season form, 20-10 with 3 steals and a block in 42 minutes, while Brook Lopez had 27 with 3 assists. Now, I talked about Lopez yesterday in the DFS section, saying he had a good opportunity. I didn't think he'd do this well, but obviously he played well. While Lonzo Ball had 16-6-5, he is shooting a ridiculous amount from 3 recently, hitting them at all for every game pretty much. 4 triples here, 2 steals and a block, and this is why I think he will be a top at least 30 guy next year, and probably a top 20 guy. Look at that contribution right across the board. Isaiah Thomas had 13-3-9, while Julius Randle definitely a down game from him, 12-11. All right, let's do the player spotlight now. We're going to go to Boston, and we're going to tackle Terry Tito Rozier. Shout out to the guys on Locked On Celtics who have got the Tito nickname rolling over there. Even got that nickname published in a Boston Globe article on Terry Rozier. So shout out to Sam and Jay and John over on Locked On Celtics for getting that. That's all I want. I want one of my nicknames to go not viral, but to go mainstream, and they've achieved it with Tito. So shout out to you guys. Speaking of Tito Rozier, he has been impressive this season, but the overall numbers, when you look at them, they don't look all that good. 24 minutes per game, 10 points, almost 2 threes a game, 4.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists with a steal, shooting 40% from the field, 53% true shooting. But you have to really dig into it. This was a guy who was a worse shooter than Marcus Smart last season. He's taken his true shooting from 47% to 53%, his 3-point percentage from 32 to 39%, and his field goals overall from 37 to 40. His per 36 numbers have also improved a lot. He's 15 points per game as opposed to 11 last year. A very strong rebounder, 6.5 per 36. The assists, the steals, the same as what they were throughout his career, but increasing those threes from 1.6 to 2.6. So taking big steps forward. And anecdotally, I've said it this year plenty of times, that when he gets the opportunity, he puts up pretty big gains. We saw that stretch of starts he had at the end of January, start of February. He had 3 starts in a row. He had a 17-11-10 triple-double with 3 triples, 2 steals and 2 blocks. He had 31-7-2 with 2 steals and 6 triples. And then he had 11-6-5 in that next game. So obviously a really strong run of performances. And in the last game with Kyrie Irving sideline, he didn't start, but he played 32 and he had 13-3-7. The last time that he scored in single digits was the game before that starting stretch on the 29th of January, where he had 8 points. He's been in double figures every single game from there. He's dishing the assists with multiple seven assist games plus a 10 assist game, and he is a strong rebounder. And in fact, you know, I guess, which would be really surprising given how poor he was last year, he has hit at least 2 threes in 10 of the previous 11 games, something that not an expectation for Terry Rozier. One of the other things that I look at with these guys in their second and third year in the NBA is what do their advanced stats look like? He's taken his PER above average. Again, all these things aren't the be-all and end-all of everything, but when everything is trending in a positive direction, it's impressive. Win shares, well above average. Win shares per 48, at a very, very good level of 0.138. And he got his box score plus minus up to 1.8. Now, to have your defensive box score plus minus as a point guard is at 1, that's very impressive. And players who have decently high box score plus minuses in their third season, they tend to go on and become really serviceable to solid players. The on-off stuff's not great for him. He's never been a positive in his career. His best year is this year, negative 2.9. Some of that is the guy that's in front of him is Kyrie Irving, so the on-off stuff can be a little bit skewed there. He was negative 4.1 last year and negative 10.2 the year before, so never had a positive season in the on-off, but everything else is starting to improve, and I think that Rozier at some point can be a starting caliber point guard in the NBA for all the shit that Danny Ainge and the Celtics get for, you can't trade Terry Rozier. I think that he can actually be a starting point guard and be a top 75 fantasy guy. Probably got a 3 or 4 year run in him at that sort of a level. So I do really like what he can do. So some people will really enjoy what he does. We've seen it before. I would be inclined to invest in him in Dynasty with a 2 year sort of repayment thought process in your head that he'll repay that value in a couple of years. I think he can start. I think he can be a top 70 guy. The high rebound numbers, the threes, the percentages coming up, you know, dishing six assists per game, being a six rebound per game guy, getting 1.5 steals, that's all really valuable in fantasy, and that's what Tito Rozier does. All right, let's do some DFS. We will start with the perfect DFS lineup on FanDuel. Your point guards were Kyle Lowry at 56.9 and Chrissy Dunn at 44.1. DeMar DeRozan at 54.8 and Chrissy Middleton at 45.9 are your shooting guards. Dylan Brooksy Brooks at 39.2 or Jim Ennis at 28. At your power forward, As Gordon 47.8 and the future MVP Kyle Kuzma 43.5. While at center, Nikola Vucevic at 52.5 for a total of 412.6, and that cost $59,200. Remember, FanDuel did not include that first that Utah Pacers game in their main slate. On DraftKings, Lowry had 56.75 and DeMar DeRozan had 56.5. Middleton 48, Gordon 52.5, that's Azar. Jonas Valanciunas 42.75. Frankie Mason had 30.75. Brooksy had 39.75. And Nick Vucevic had 53.5. That cost totaled 380.5. And it cost the full $50,000. All right, let's move in to preview a five-game slate for DFS on Thursday, a smallish slate as we're used to on Thursdays. The first game is the Brooklyn Nets. They are going to Charlotte, and the Hornets are favored by 7. The total is 218 points. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was ejected in the last game. I would imagine there's no issue with him playing in this game. Here, at point guard, Kemba Walker, 9,000. Golden rule of DFS, point guards against the Nets, it's always a good option. Centers against the Nets, it's definitely a good option. Now, Kemba's salary is pretty high in this one. That 9,000 does take him away from being a cash guy, but I love it for tournaments, and you could squeeze it in cash, I guess. Spencer Dinwiddie's down to 6,500 because of the impact of D'Angelo Russell. I'm not really loving Dinwiddie, even at that reduced price. As for D'Angelo, 7,400, coming off a string of good games, a 32 average over his last five. The matchup here is a bit of a negative. Nick Batum is a solid defender, so that's a reason though I'd keep Russell out of cash game consideration on FanDuel, but definitely worth a tournament look. Batum himself at 7,300 has always done well against the Nets. He's got a very solid floor. I've got no problem with using him in cash. I think he's a fairly strong cash player, to be honest. LeVert has played well lately. He's at 5,100, though. That's probably pushing it a bit much, while Malik Monk is now the backup point guard. Minimum salary for Malik had 16 points in his last game in only 16 minutes. In a five-game slate, you want to differentiate yourself. Maybe Monk can heat up. The matchup's not a tough one. He does have 25-point potential here, I think, Malik, and at 3,500, I reckon you want to have a look at it. Small forward, Kidd-Gilchrist, no. Jez Lamb, 4,700, probably not. Cunningham, no. Jumpin' Joe Harris, probably not either. While Damari Carroll, the guy who's really been crushing it, averaging 33 over the last five, his price is at 6,300, and with the way that he's been playing, it's really hard to think that that's a terrible option. The problem is I just feel like there's always some level of volatility in his playing time, and it makes it hard for me to lock him in cash, but I don't think it's a bad choice. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's at 5,300. It looks like he's going to remain on the bench, and that really does, I believe, limit his upside, so I'd be looking tournaments only. Marv Williams, not interested. Well, Frank the Tank at 4,300. Big men against the Nets. Frank's getting extra minutes. He's hitting some shots at 4,300. I think he's going to get 20 points. I think he'll get to at least 25 in this one, so he's a good option. Cody Zeller's at 3,600. If the game's a blowout, could he drop in 24 points in limited minutes? Sure. Dwight Howard at 8,400. Centers against the Nets, man. It is time for him to have a 45 or a 50-pointer. He had 46 in his game against the Sixers, so he's really got that opportunity. Well, I don't think we can really trust Jarrett Allen at 4,900, especially in a matchup against Dwight Howard. Although centers against the Hornets have been putting up big numbers, I just don't have any trust in Allen's playing time at this point, which is unfortunate because I do really like him as a player. I'm sure he's a great bloke as well, I just don't know him. On DraftKings, for tournaments, Kemba and D'Angelo Russell, for the reasons I mentioned earlier, although Russell could slide into cash considerations just because of his $6,700 price tag, Kemba's at 87 and Dinwiddie at 6,000. At that price, I'd be happy to use him. While Dwight at 8,300, all about it. Centers against the Nets, we attack those pretty aggressively, and it gives you generally pretty good results. The next game is the Philadelphia 76ers and the Miami Heat. The Sixers are favored by one, a real crucial battle, a crucial game for both of these teams in the seeding race. 208.5 is the total, the lowest of the day. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, should be back for Miami, and their rotation is going to be a mess. They have legitimately got 12 guys that they could play. I think maybe they play 10. Does Bam play? Does Scooter Magruder play? But they've got a 12-man rotation, which could be a real issue. Who's going to miss out? Where do the minutes go? Is Spoelstra just going to change it based on a whim? And based on what we've seen from him, then yes. Luke Babbitt's the other guy that's in that 12-man rotation. Sorry. So how is he going to run all these guys? How is it all going to happen? There is a lot of confusion with that Heat rotation at this point. At point guard, Tyler Johnson's at 5,200. He had 43 points in 38 minutes. I think that sort of playing time is an unrealistic expectation, but shit, it can obviously happen because it happened in the last game, and that is not a high salary for Tyler, so I'd be okay using him. While the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, 6,700 for Goran. Ben Simmons' point guard defense has been very, very good this year, and point guards have struggled against the Sixers, so I think I would end up fading Goran here. Timothy John McConnell, we can leave him alone. At shooting guard, JJ Redick at 4,800. No upside, low floor. That's a pass. The Duke, 3,800. No. Dwayne Wade, 5,100. The numbers are fine for Wade, but I too many guys around where his upside is going to be capped by what sort of playing time he gets, while Bellinelli's not really an interest of mine. At small forward, Joshy Richardson's at $6,000. Again, just the real confusion over how that playing time's going to shake out makes it hard to use him in cash. But Justice Winslow at $5,000, he has been playing excellently. He's averaging 29 over the last five, which is higher than Richardson. He comes in $1,000 cheaper. Now, I don't know if they're going to start Winslow, if they're going to play him off the bench, if they're going to play him 20 minutes, or if they're going to play him 30 minutes. But I think that he is worth looking at, especially in tournaments, but I think he does have some cash value. Bob Covert, 56, turned the corner a bit, but he's still very, very up and down, and I would use him in tournaments, and that's it. At power for Dario Saric at 6,300. I like Saric here. Get me my 30 sort of almost minimum. Maybe it's only a 35-point ceiling, but I think he's going to get that number. While Kelly Olynyk at 46, I don't know. I just don't know what Olynyk we're getting, and I think the upside's pretty limited there. Jim Johnson at 43, I don't want anything to do with, nor Ersan Ilyasov or Amir Johnson. At center, Hassan Whiteside's at $7,000. Do we get 58-point Hassan Whiteside that we got against the Suns, or do we get 19-point Hassan Whiteside that he got in that last game? He has done well against Embiid in the past, and at $7,000, he can very, very easily exceed that. So I've got no worries with using Hassan in tournaments. There's just no way to really trust him in cash. As for Embiid at $9,800, the numbers have been a bit down for Joel lately. He's been okay against Whiteside without being brilliant. I think he's probably going to be a fade, though, in this situation. And, of course, we're not really considering Bam Adebayo. On DraftKings, Bob Cove's at 55, tournament guy there, while Winslow at 4,500. That is a very, very good price for Justice. Really good tournament play with some cash value. Ben Simmons, I didn't like him as much on FanDuel, but I'd love him on DraftKings at 8,000, while Saric at 61 is a cash option, and Joshy Richardson at 53. It's that big price dip that really gets me turned on. Embiid at 9,500, maybe, but I'm not super into it, while Whiteside is priced higher on DraftKings at FanDuel, and that's always a red flag, so I think that's going to make him, definitely only tournaments, but even then, probably not someone I'd be looking to put into all of my lineups. The Boston Celtics and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Celtics are favored by two, and the total is 214.5 here. Kyrie Irving looks like he's going to return in this one, while Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
We haven't heard any word yet, but he did shove Ricky Rubio into the seats in that last game, so a suspension could be coming. Obviously, if he misses, Tyus Jones is going to get the big boost, and a guy like Andy Wiggins will probably see the ball in his hands even more, which could significantly bump his value. At point guard here, we've got Teague at 7,400. Teague has been playing very well with Jimmy Butler out, and I think that if he plays and if there's no word of a suspension, then he is a fairly strong cash guy here. Whereas Irving at 8,500, coming back from a sore knee against a team that has been quite good defensively against point guards, I'm not sure I want to spend that on Kyrie. Rozier at 3,000. He is at $6,000 based on his big performance last game. Kyrie's back, so that is a strong, strong fade. While Tyus Jones at minimum salary if there's no... and actually, can you believe it? The Timberwolves finally, in the month of February, they started playing Jones and Teague together. Hasn't happened much, but it has happened. Jones at minimum salary, we'd absolutely be using that. Even in cash, I think he can sneak through 17 or 18 points pretty comfortably. In fact, he put up 24 points in 25 minutes in the last game when Teague got ejected. At shooting guard, Wigo's at 6,400. I think that's a tournament play. If Teague is out, I would move that to cash. While Jamal Crawford at 4,300, he would also get a boost in Teague's absence, but I still would only like to use him as a tournament player. Jaylen Brown's at 52. At that sort of a price, I think you can use him in cash. I don't know how high his upside is, but I think you're going to get 24 to 27 out of him majority of the time, but there is still an element of risk. While Marcus Smart at 5,000, I'm not really feeling super into that. Nemanja Bjelica at 5,300. There's very little value on FanDuel on this slate in general. Bjelica doesn't stand out as this great, great, super duper, great ratio, super value play. But I think he's solid. I think he can get 25 or 26, and that's a pretty good cash option. Jayce Tatum at 4,700 has been struggling in terms of playing time. If you're going to use him, it'd be tournaments only. Gorgui Dieng at 3,800. Yeah, I don't really see too much there from him. While Taj at 56. I think Taj at 56 is a nice cash play with having limited tournament upside. Marcus Morris and Vanilla Tice, probably not. At center, Karl Anthony Towns, 10,400. I think a 50 here is a realistic expectation for Towns. 60 is also, you know, firmly in his grasp. I really like him for cash and tournaments. While Al Horford, who, according to one of the worst articles you'll read on the internet, is apparently a big problem for the Celtics because of just how bad he is as a max salary player. Literally the one of the worst takes I've seen, apart from some knob the other day calling LeBron a fraud. 6,600 for Al Horford here. Horford's done well against Towns and the Timberwolves before. I think his ownership will be pretty low given how much he's, you know, struggled with his form. I think he is a GPP sneak attack sort of a guy. Greggy Monroe, Bainesy, probably not looking at those guys too interestingly at all. On DraftKings, Townsy at 9.3, banging that hard. While Wigo at 6.3, same story. Tournament that you can convert to cash if Teague is out, whereas Teague at 7,000, I think he's a really strong play if he does happen to escape suspension. Bjelica and Horford, very similar roles to what I think they should have over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game. It's the Phoenix Suns and it's the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 10.5 and the total is the biggest of the day. It's 228 points. Troy Daniels has been upgraded to probable with a right knee hyperextension. At point guard, Lord Alfred Payton, 7,300. Payton plays well against the Thunder. He averages 43 the last three times. He did it as a member of the Magic. He did it as a member of the Suns. I think he's a fine guy to use here, cash and tournaments. While point guards against the Magic, it's always pretty juicy. 12,000 for Russell Westbrook. 12,000's a lot, but on a five-game slate, I've got no issue with using Westbrook. I think he's a great cash play with tournament upside as well. At shooting guard, Devin Booker at 8,200. A good record for him against the Thunder. He's totally fine. We know what he's doing every game. It's almost 40 every single game, which is a great, great floor and makes him a good cash guy. Abrines, Ferguson, Shaq Harrison, Troy Daniels, I don't think you want anything to do with them. TJ Warren's at 6,500. I'm not interested in cash, maybe in tournaments, but that's about it. While Joshie Jackson at 53, I think is a pretty strong tournament play, but I also don't feel good about him in cash, just given the way that his role has been nullified recently. While Paulie George, I think that George is in a strong spot. Obviously, the opponent's not that strong, but 8,900 doesn't really turn me on that much on FanDuel, but I still think he's in an area to produce, you know, 40, 41 points, but not, you know, up to 45 or 46, which is sort of where you'd want him to be. At power forward, Dragan Bender's at 39. No, thank you. Carmelo Anthony at 6,000. There's a bit of tournament upside there, but I wouldn't get too involved. While Marquise Chris has jumped to 4,600 because he's been playing better recently, but at 4,600, it's almost taking away all the upside from Chris. So I'll leave him out of it. Jeremy Grant, no interest. At center, Tyson Chandler at 43, no thanks, but Steven Adams is one I am interested in. He's at 7,100, can very comfortably get a 40 here. We saw Hassan Whiteside bludgeon this team, and Adams has got every opportunity to do that, so I like Adams here. While Alex Len at 4,200, I think you should steer well clear of that. On DraftKings, Westbrook, George, and Payton are all cash and tournament options, while Chris is still down low. It's a really big difference. He's at 3,800, so I love that for tournaments. He can get you 26 or 27 really easily, and it's a great return on his investment. Booker at 8,900 is not in as strong a spot as what he is on FanDuel, but you could still make that argument to use him in cash. I probably wouldn't personally. The last game of the night, we've got the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs. Rudy Gay is likely to play after dealing with that eardrum perforation, while Pau Gasol is out. We've got David West and Andre Iguodala both doubtful for the Golden State Warriors, and Jordan Bell ruled out already. Not really much I like for cash in this one. Steph's at 9,900, and I suppose if you want to use anyone for cash, Curry is worthwhile. DeJounte Murray at 6,500 has been struggling in his last game and struggled against the Warriors in the past. I don't think this is the ideal matchup at that salary to go ahead and use him. Patty Mills will also likely start at shooting guard. He's at 4,500. I just think the upside is not high enough and the floor is too low to really like him as much at all. Klay Thompson's at 6,500. The numbers have been a bit better for Klay, but still consistently overpriced. While Uncle P at minimum salary, does he get an extra role with Iguodala unlikely to play Pat McCaw out? Maybe. At minimum salary, Nick Young has had some weird games, so that could be an interesting one, and the opportunity is clearly there. Dan Green at 48, I just don't see the upside in that. At small forward, Durant at 9.8, very similar to Steph. Not really sure I'm into it in cash, but for a tournament, I would prefer Steph, though, over him. Gay at 4,300, I think you can leave. While Kyle Anderson at 6,200, minimum upside. Not a bad guy, but at that sort of price, I think there are better ways to spend that money. Draymond Green's at 7,700. If I was going to use one of those Warriors big four guys in cash, it would probably be Draymond. I still don't feel good about it. While LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,200, despite Draymond Green really being a tough matchup for him at times, he is averaging 41 the last three times against Golden State. So he's been able to put up some good numbers. And I think that Aldridge carrying the offense here with a big salary dip could be a really good tournament guy. At center, we've got Joffrey Laverne, we've got Zaza Pachulia, we've got JaVale McGee, and you should probably leave all those alone. There's also Davis Bertans, who'll probably start in place of Pau Gasol, but I think you're looking at tournaments only, and it's a pretty deep dive. On DraftKings, Steph is a cash option. I think Draymond is a cash option given their prices, and Aldridge is pretty close at 7,700. Probably still lean more towards him as being a tournament guy. Not much else changes except Kyle Anderson at 5,100. At that price, I'd feel all right about him in cash. It's not too hard for him to reach that level of value on DraftKings. All right, let's go through the remaining sites on Yahoo for tournaments. We've got Justice Winslow, Marquise Chris, and Jarrett Allen, Marcus Morris, Frank the Tank, Marvin Williams, and Jumpin' Joe Harris. And for cash and tournaments, Vanilla Tice, Pat Mills, Dragan Bender, Kelly Olynyk, Draymond Green, Ben Simmons, Dwight Howard, Kemba Walker, Joel Embiid, Steph, and Karl Anthony Towns. On Moneyball for tournaments, we've got Whiteside, Andy Wiggins, Marquise Chris, Tyler Johnson, Marvin Williams. And for both formats, Justice Winslow, Bielitsa, Steve Adams, Alfred Payton, Ben Simmons, Devin Booker, Dwight Howard, Kemba Walker, Paul George, Durant, Curry, Towns, and Westbrook. And on DraftStars for tournaments, we've got Kyrie, Andy Wiggins, Joshie Jackson, Marquise Chris, Jamal Crawford, Gorgie Jang. And for both formats, Justice Winslow, Joshie Richardson, Šarić, Steve Adams, D'Angelo Russell, Lord Alfred Payton, Devin Booker, Paul George, Kemba Walker, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Townsy, and Russell Westbrook. If you do listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star rating and a review. It's a great way of helping out the podcast. And you can also find it on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And on YouTube, where I'd like you to go and give a thumbs up, leave a comment, and subscribe to my YouTube channel as well. Make sure you're checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. And if you don't know, I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. My name is Josh Lloyd. And of course, go follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Matthew Dellavedova.